Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Dr. Nimit Agarwal, an associate professor and chief of geriatric medicine at University of Arizona College of Medicine, Phoenix, and we will be discussing age-friendly hospitals. A hospitalization is not easy on anyone. And for people with dementia, it can be quite challenging. Many of the strategies for living well with dementia, things like avoiding overwhelm, keeping a routine, are disrupted with a hospital stay, making it difficult on the person, those who care about and for them, and for hospital staff. Age-friendly hospitals strive to reliably provide the four M's: what matters, medication, mentation, and mobility to all older adults. And we just happen to have one such hospital in our Banner Health System right down the street from BAI Phoenix at Banner University Medical Center, Phoenix. Interestingly, Banner University Medical Center, Phoenix has ranked in the high-performing programs per U.S. News and World Report for geriatric medicine annually. I'm really excited to talk to our guest today who is leading this age-friendly initiative.
You know, it is so difficult for most anyone. And so many of us have had our own family stories to tell about a hospitalization, but it is especially hard on people living with dementia, their caregivers, their families, and like you said, the physicians and the staff who are all working so hard to make a difference. And Heather, as you know, and our listeners might remember, they might remember this as well, that to address this, I had the pleasure of working with a team of healthcare professionals and community partners to create a dementia-friendly hospital unit. And this was so fulfilling, and we found it to be a vital way to provide outstanding and compassionate patient care. And I am so looking forward to this conversation about age-friendly hospitals with Dr. Agarwal, who leads this evidence-based, innovative model of care on such a large scale.
Welcome, Dr. Agarwal. Thank you for joining the conversation.
Thank you so much, both Janice and Heather. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Before we learn more about age-friendly hospitals, we would love to learn a little bit more about you. Tell us about your journey and what led you to connect with the dementia community.
As you know, Janice and Heather, I did my internal medicine training in New York. And while I was doing residency, I really felt that when my attendings, my teachers, were taking care of older adults, there was no consistency in the management, especially when it comes to patients with dementia. One may say, hey, we should do this. And the other one might say, well, that doesn't make sense. Let's try something else. So I was really looking into what is the right answer. And that really took me on this journey of doing the geriatrics fellowship. And I was really truly amazed, because for internal medicine physicians, family medicine docs, when they do geriatric medicine, it's really learning a different language. It's like learning a different philosophy. We might know the medical management of disease, but how do you connect the psychosocial, the challenges that patients face, and not just the patient, but looking at the caregiver with the patient, how that connects into this equation of disease management? And that was a total philosophy change, a total language that you had to learn again. And that is what we teach our fellows now. Like, hey, I'm not going to teach you anything in medicine, maybe a little bit more than what you have learned in internal medicine or family medicine, but I'm going to teach you a new language, a new way of thinking, a new philosophy. And that was the reason I went on this journey and I've been so fascinated and so happy with this step that I've taken for my career.
What an interesting and inspirational journey. I love that you learned these lessons early on and now you're taking them and inspiring the next generation of clinicians to continue to ask these same questions. I would love to learn a little bit more. You are part of the Center for Healthy Aging. Can you tell us what does that mean?
Yeah, I'm glad that you're asking that because the Center for Healthy Aging truly is our division of geriatric medicine. And the reason we call it Center for Healthy Aging because it's not where we just practice medicine, but we want to have the center where we can be a resource to our patients, to our community. And that's the reason why we call it Center for Healthy Aging. So in 2016, when I started as hospital medicine physician here at Banner University around 2014 or so, we didn't have a geriatrics program. And we kind of felt like, hey, there is a gap here. We manage 40% of the population as hospital medicine physicians, which are geriatric, and significant number have our patients with dementia or some kind of delirium, which is affecting their mentation. And I was actually just going through the corridor and met the CEO of the hospital, Steve Narang, at that time, like, hey, we probably need to do something about geriatric care. And he's like, oh, okay, tell me more. And he asked me to write a business plan. And University of Arizona and Banner was just connecting at that time. And Banner University Medical Center was formed around 2016, 2015, around that time. And the new chair of medicine is like, yeah, this looks like a great idea. Let's present it to our senior ops team. And that is where the Division of Geriatric Medicine was really formed. And I'm so glad that we did that because we've been able to expand some really interesting work that is going on in the nation through this division, through the Center for Healthy Aging. Examples of that are the Geriatric Emergency Department, the Age-Friendly Health Systems, NICH, which is Nurses Improving Care for Health System Elders. There is just so much energy that we have brought in into our community because of some of this work that is going on in the nation.
I love how this all started with your inspiration and with a conversation in the hallway. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about your inspiration behind this initiative and what all was happening to show that there was a need.
So when I go on rounds with my team and I'm seeing patients, my heart really aches when I see patients laying in the bed when the meal tray comes and there is no engagement going on. And for a older patient or for a person with dementia, that's not right. We really need to have hospitals thinking a little bit differently. We need to have our hospitals thinking about what really matters to our patients and not just look at the disease itself. We see patients at the worst times in their life. When you are in a hospital, it's really like you are going through a disease process which requires hospitalization. You're going through a really bad time. I think we can do much more than what we normally do in the usual state of things, right? And that really was the inspiration to take that step. So for example, you have an 85-year-old patient who comes into the hospital with a pneumonia. And the traditional way of practicing medicine is, let's treat the pneumonia, right? But my feeling is that's not the reason for practicing medicine. And you can treat the disease. Maybe 50 years down the line or 20 years down the line, we might be having AI treating disease, right? But we need the human component here. We need the compassion. We need to connect with our patients. We need to connect with them as people, as person. And when we see this 85-year-old patient, let's say we call him Bill. If you hear the inside story about Bill, he's a person who was a pilot in World War II. He was paratrooping. He has kept himself fit. He can, if I asked him to go climb Mount Lemmon, he could do that. But when he comes in with pneumonia, we see a different Bill. And our brain as physicians might think, hey, he's not doing that well and he might need a skilled nursing facility down the line. But that might not be the goal for Bill. What matters to Bill might be like, hey, I'm climbing Mount Lemmon. I want to be able to drive to Tucson from Phoenix as soon as I get out of the hospital. How can you make that happen? That's the what matters. So we treat the disease, but also connect to that what matters by making sure we have no delirium that is settling in while he is here, and making sure that he is exercising, walking around. The social isolation is not impacting his mind. We have family coming in together to help him. Engage with him when he is eating his meals, not inside the bed, but in the chair like he would do at home. Those are the things that we want to make a difference. And that was truly the inspiration, to get to connect with the person in our patients and really find out the what matters. And that's why this Age-Friendly Health System initiative is just so important, because it really gets us to the crux of person-centered care.
Dr. Agarwal, I think that example really helped illustrate how you are kind of learning a different language, and you're not just treating a specific disease, but the whole person. In that example, I picked up on the four M's of age-friendly hospitals, but I wonder if you could really kind of spell it out for us. What are the goals of this type of facility?
So Age-Friendly Health Systems initiative was started around 2019, about that time. And it's an initiative that started from the John A. Hartford Foundation, which is in Connecticut. It's a philanthropy organization which supports care for older adults. And Institute for Healthcare Improvement, which is a large quality improvement organization in the country, really partnered with several other organizations to make this Age-Friendly Health System initiative possible. The 4M framework of the Age-Friendly Health Systems really is the crux of age-friendly care. And those 4Ms, just like you spelled them out, are focused on mentation, mobility, medication, and what matters. Their goal is, when we as health system people working in the health system, personnel working in the health system, it could be a physician, it could be a nurse, it could be a case manager, a social worker, a therapist, whoever connects to an older person in the hospital setting or in a clinic setting or in a health system setting, we want to expand our horizon to think about those 4Ms. And you don't want to think about the 4Ms in solitary nature. Like, you want to think about them together, because they all connect together. So mentation, for example, when you have an older adult, our bias might say that an older adult may have dementia, but that might not be the case. So we want to do an extra step to understand the person in our patient. If this person was driving in the community and doing things without any challenges, then maybe they don't have dementia. We want to be careful about our bias saying that an older person may have dementia. So we have to be careful about them. It tells us to take a structured approach to looking at those nuances. Same thing with mobility. Like I said, when we see Bill in the hospital, we see them at their worst state. But he's a person who is walking, doing everything like a 45-year-old person would, right? From that perspective, knowing what their frailty status is, are they fit, are they truly frail, and what can we do to preserve their function? How do we mobilize them in the hospital so that they are not losing that function is essential. Same thing with medications. We put patients on medication. Oh, he's not sleeping, let's put this one on. He's not eating, let's put this medication on. But how is it connecting to the person's mentation and the mobility? Is this medicine going to affect their mentation or mobility? And does it connect to their what matters? That's the equation you have to connect to when you're adding that extra medication. And then what matters to Bill, like I said, was to go back to driving and be able to climb Mount Lemmon again, to go on that hike. How do we make that possible for our patients by looking at the mentation, mobility, and medications? That's the concept of the 4Ms. That is why it has to be done together by every single person who is involved with the care of the older adult in the age-friendly hospital or the age-friendly health system.
What an incredible equation, a structure for care that's so supportive for the patient. And I love it that everyone who's working with that patient is educated and knows what matters and the medication and the mentation and the mobility and how those all are so important. I'm wondering, does age-friendly include dementia-friendly too?
Great question, Janice. So when we say age-friendly, the mentation component connects to the dementia-friendly in some way, right? Like I said, like we are looking for patients and identifying if there is a cognitive impairment from before. If we do have a person with dementia, we really want to have a very structured approach for managing the care of that person. Someone with dementia, it's not just the person, but it's the caregiver, the care partner. So it's really that connectedness together, which is important, especially in the hospital setting. What happened during COVID was we had patients coming to the hospital with COVID. We had older adults specifically coming to the hospital with COVID. And we had a lot of patients coming in from nursing homes into the hospital with COVID. And a lot of these patients had some kind of cognitive impairment, likely dementia. If we had a structured approach for age-friendly care at that time, we would have thought about like, hey, we are forgetting the care partner here. How do we look at our health system with the resources that we have? How do we include the care partner in that journey? We forgot about them when we put in the restrictions for people coming in. But those are things we need to be thinking about and be prepared if an emergency comes along. And that's why age-friendly connects to dementia-friendly. That extension of that equation needs to happen. So what we are doing at Banner University is we have a person coming in with dementia. We want to identify that as soon as possible and be able to include the caregiver, the care partner, with the person while they are here in the hospital. We want to be able to know what their routine is at home. What do they like to do? What are the things that they like to hear in regard to music? What kind of pictures or family things that they want to talk about? And we ask our caregivers to bring those things to the nursing staff. We have special pamphlets that we have created with a sign called the age-friendly room sign. On the back of it, we create this tailored program for our patients with dementia, that this is the time that the person likes to eat breakfast. He wants to go out to the memory garden downstairs, the healing garden down there, with the family around 11 o'clock. And at 8 o'clock, he would like to sleep. So let's keep the temperature okay. Let's keep the sound to as little as possible. Keep the door closed. When you go in to check on the person, make sure you open it very gently and you just see, make sure the patient is safe. If you can avoid checking vitals or doing any other interruptions to sleep, then we should do those things. But we write those things down for the nursing staff to be able to follow them. We encourage our care partners to be there with the person at nighttime, during the daytime, so that they're constantly available. Same thing for patients with dementia who speak a different language than English. In that case, having the right people taking care of them, someone who can speak the same language, especially the care partner, is absolutely essential. So those are the things that we want to do for dementia-friendly as part of the age-friendly equation.
This thoughtful approach, just I could see bring a lot of relief to family members when they know that hospitalization can be so stressful and so hard on the person living with dementia. I know a lot of people with dementia, when they enter the hospital, will experience a delirium. And this is such a challenge. We've actually, in one of our previous episodes, focused an entire conversation on delirium. I'm curious to learn from you how a focused treatment plan like this could help with this type of concern.
That's a great question, Heather. When we are teaching our fellows, our residents, delirium is really an enigma. And the reason why I call it an enigma is, when you see an 85-year-old Bill come into the hospital with a urinary tract infection or a pneumonia, the chances for Bill to develop delirium is about 30%. We know that in research. if they are doing special procedures like cardiac procedures or orthopedic procedures, the risk increases even higher. If they're going into anesthesia, then the risk increases even more. Imagine when Bill comes into the hospital and is showing those signs of delirium, the automatic response from our biases in our brain would be that this person has dementia. And that can really change the trajectory of how interventions happen. For example, if we want you to do a life-saving procedure and we're saying, hey, this person has dementia, and I'm not sure if the procedure will benefit the person in our lifetime, in their lifetime, we might take a different approach in that case. But that may be the wrong approach to take, right? So it's so important to differentiate dementia from delirium. And if someone has delirium, identify it early on by doing a structured approach, by doing an objective test in a screening fashion every single time, every single, like at least two times a day that we do in the hospital, for example. And we want to be able to identify this early and get a specialized team like the geriatrics team or a team which is focused on management of delirium in the hospital, because delirium keeps patients in the hospital 5 days longer. We know that from data, from research. When patients stay in the hospital 5 days longer, they get more deconditioned, might end up going into a skilled nursing facility. And complications from those can cause challenges in their function, which can impact how they would be able to go drive a car back, because delirium can persist for about 10 weeks after the initial event. So you want to catch the delirium early on, because then you can do preventive strategies or treatment strategies. But once delirium sets in and you're looking at that 5 days down the line, that can be challenging. So what we tell our residents and fellows, when you see that sign of delirium coming on, I don't want you to think about, oh, this is just maybe a little bit confusion, it might go away. That's your early warning sign for acute brain failure. And that truly is a term for delirium, acute brain failure. That definition has been explained in the literature. It truly is acute brain failure because there are neurotransmitters in the brain which are causing challenges with how neurons are going to be working. And we want to prevent that damage in the brain by using that early sign as a warning sign for making changes, identifying what's causing this delirium. It could be because the patient is on a medication, which is causing this change in mentation. It could be because the person is not sleeping at nighttime. It could be because he's socially isolated, or it could be because we have confined him in bed because we are concerned he could fall and he's not moving around and he's losing his mobility. Those are the kind of things we want to focus on. There are two types of delirium. It comes in two flavors. One is hyperactive delirium and the other one is hypoactive delirium. The hyperactive delirium is the one where patients might get more aggressive. And the hypoactive delirium might be where the person might be just laying in bed and not talking too much. But what's important for us to know is what is the change as compared to the person's state at home. And that is why having the caregiver is so essential, so important to get to know the person in our patient. Because if they are aggressive with the nursing staff, hey, don't do this, don't do that, I don't want to do this, is that his normal? Or is this something different? That could be an early sign of hyperactive delirium. But let me tell you, the hyperactive delirium is the more dangerous kind, because this is the person who's just going to lay in bed and not going to ask too much, and everyone is going to forget about him. But that's the person who's going to have more complications. He's the person who might land up in ICU because his blood pressure might drop. So those things we want to be very careful about. We want to be able to catch those early signs as early as possible to make a difference.
I'm just thinking about our caregivers and how fortunate they would feel to come to a hospital and have care like you're talking about, especially during the pandemic. I'm thinking of some stories that I personally knew of, and just having you say having the caregiver there is so critical, and knowing them and having them come alongside the healthcare providers. But unfortunately, not every hospital is an age-friendly hospital. So what advice would you give to a caregiver who doesn't have access to the age-friendly hospital, and maybe they suspect delirium?
It's really important to have the caregiver explain to the doctors, to the nursing staff at the hospital where your loved one is going to be at, and give them an idea about who he really is. What's the person in your loved one? They need to know about it. It might help if you leave a picture of Bill climbing Mount Everest with a time or a date on it, that this is when he went on this journey. That picture can be so powerful, because anyone who comes into the room sees that picture and says, hey, Bill climbed Mount Lemon on August 1st, 2023. That's so powerful, right? Because they're going to see Bill from a different lens now. And they're going to do everything possible to make sure that he is ready to take the next hiking journey. Simple things like that can make a big difference. Another thing that I would recommend is bring the favorite clothes or favorite pictures, or have a list of music that they love to hear, and leave it to the nursing staff. Most of the hospitals now have some kind of music program or some kind of interventions that they can provide to get this connectedness. Even though you're in the hospital, think of it more as a place where you are there for healing. And to make that place for healing, you want to have something similar like home, something which is comfortable, something which is cozy, something which really imbibes this feeling of healing in the person. So those things are important. If they have special equipment that they use, like a walking cane or a walker, bring them. Medications are important. Bring all the medications that he takes at home, or a list of all medications, and keep several copies of that, and give several copies to the nursing staff, to physicians, so that even if one is lost, you have another copy that you can give to a different person. And the most important thing, have a medical power of attorney, a document which says, if Bill is unable to make decisions himself, this is the person to call. And have your phone ready. When you get this phone call from the hospital, pick up that phone. Those phone calls are just so important for us. If we can speak with you, get to know about Bill, that changes the trajectory of how Bill is going to have an outcome from this disease process that he is in the hospital for. So those are some of the tips. Alzheimer's Association has a ton of resources available for things like this when patients are in the hospital. A National Institute of Aging has a ton of resources for dementia care. So there are several resources available for caring for older adults in the hospital setting.
You've offered some really solid strategies that our caregivers can implement if their person may be experiencing a hospitalization, and some really inspirational discussion about the age-friendly initiative. Before we close our conversation, why don't you give us your final thought when it comes to age-friendly hospitals?
Age-friendly hospitals are not difficult to achieve. That designation is not difficult to achieve at all. You really have to demonstrate a commitment to do those four M's together. And frankly speaking, a lot of hospitals are doing that already, but not in a very structured fashion. You just have to put your hand like, hey, I'm here to help my community, and my community has older adults which need my help. If you have that thought, you will take the next step in becoming an age-friendly health system. Even a small unit in your hospital where you have 20 patients coming in, you can start with that. You can start with, hey, I'm gonna do the four M's. It doesn't have to be the physician. The nursing staff can do mentation and mobility aspect. The physician is looking at the medication aspect. And then the physician and nursing staff together are identifying what is the goal for Bill while he is here in the hospital. His goal is that I want to go driving back in about a week's time and go to hike on Mount Lemon. If we can write that goal, you have met the four M's. You do it on 30 patients. You document them that on a very simple application, and you send it to IHI, Institute for Healthcare Improvement. You will get the designation for age-friendly health system participant. It's really that first step, taking that first step to say, hey, I'm here for my community, for my older adults who come to my hospital, and I want to make a difference. And I want to do those four M's together along with the disease-based processes that I'm doing already. It's that easy. But we really have to have a shift in our philosophy, in our mindset, on how we truly take care of our patients and look for the person in our patients.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. Nimit Agarwal, an associate professor and chief of geriatric medicine at University of Arizona College of Medicine, Phoenix. We appreciate you helping us untangle age-friendly hospitals.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Agarwal. It was such a pleasure having you. And I love how it's so simple, and yet those four simple components can make such a tremendous difference for our patients. So thank you so much. And thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. And thanks to you, our listeners. Thank you for joining us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at bannerhealth.com/Alzheimer's and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.